You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
I could paint a picture with a pen, but a song will only scratch the skin. And there are still places I haven't been, because I know what's in there, it's already in the air. There's a storm on the way. There's a storm on the way. All right.
Man with two names.
There's a storm on the way.
Who?
Gnarls Barkley.
Gnarls Barkley.
Gnarls Barkley and C.D. Wiggs. Guy who sang the profane songs.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesday with my co-host Sandy Williams and Sandy and Music.
Yeah, it's about storms.
Okay, and who was that?
That was Gnarls Barkley.
Gnarls Barkley.
Yeah.
All right, so Russ, if you want to know who that is and where you can get that tune, that's Gnarls Barkley. So Sandy, we keep hearing Republicans and Donald Trump talking about their plans if they're elected and what Donald Trump is going to do to improve the economy. An economy that, you know, unfortunately is not working for everybody. But is the answer to that a chicken in every pot?
Well, in a political campaign year, apparently it is. The promise of not taxing Social Security income came right out of left field. It was Ronald Reagan who decided that we needed to tax it in order to offset the tax reduction that he had. But Donald Trump operates without any fiscal discipline. Someone who's gone bankrupt six times is not someone that the nation should be looking to decide how much debt the country ought to go into. And Donald Trump plans are, you know, he says, oh, hey, this thing's going to really get the economy moving and, you know, we'll have an expansive economy that'll cover that debt. No, that wasn't going to happen with the tax cut in 2017, and it's not going to happen with his. And the notion that there needs to be any sort of jumpstart to the economy is nonsense. One, the economy is very strong. Two, what we do need is sectors of the economy to be focused upon. We need more residential housing units, okay? We need to figure out if we're going to use taxes to accomplish something, we ought to focus taxes on accomplishing certain objectives like improving residential housing, which incidentally is what Kamala Harris is talking about doing, setting up incentives to create more residential housing units.
You know, Sandy, I have to tell you, that as an average Joe, if I hear someone say, no taxes on my Social Security.
Sounds good.
Absolutely.
Well, no taxes at all. How about this? We're going to eliminate income taxes. Donald Trump's even talked about eliminating income taxes. He says that his tariffs promise to generate so much, essentially, free revenue. It's all going to be paid for by the countries that are tariffed. Countries don't get tariffed. Businesses get tariffed, okay? And products get tariffed. And the person who pays the tariff is the importer of the product, and the imported product gets tariffed, and then the price of that imported product goes up substantially, usually by the amount of the tariff, or if not the amount, almost all of the amount of the tariff, in which case the consumer ends up eating it, or the producer in America ends up eating it. It's a tax that's paid by Americans, okay? And so the whole thing is really just political nonsense. Political nonsense.
You know, Sandy, again, well, they're going to cut my taxes on my Social Security. I'm a marginal person. I struggle. And if this will add a couple hundred dollars to me a month, I see that as something that's going to help me. You say that in the long run, that's going to do even more damage to you.
Well, it'll do damage to the economy. It'll do damage to the level of taxes that are required. by others, and it's not going to have the benefits in the economy. The person on Social Security who needs lower cost housing is not going to be benefited by the loss of that tax.
Well,
incidentally, just as an aside, Gnarls Barkley is CeeLo Green.
Oh,
okay. That's the other alias I couldn't remember.
All right. So Donald Trump has pledged to end taxes on everything from tips to Social Security and overtime pay if he is elected to the White House again, but he hasn't detailed how he would fund those ideas and avoided creating a huge budget shortfall beyond arguing he will usher in an economic boom.
Well, just think about all of the collateral effects of doing those kind of things. Not taxing tip income. If you're a hotel owner and most of your employees rely on tips, you can go back to them and say, hey, your tips are now more valuable to you. I'm going to reduce your hourly pay, or I'm not going to give you the increase in hourly pay that you might otherwise be able to demand because your tips are now more valuable because they aren't taxed. So that's great, because it turns out if you're a restaurant or a hotel owner, tips don't come out of your pocket, right?
Right.
Tips come out of your customers' pockets. And so I'm sure that part of Donald Trump's dream of not taxing tip income came as a hotelier, someone who runs resort businesses and for whom tip earning employees is a big deal. The other thing is, if you don't tax
overtime,
suddenly everybody works lots of overtime. That sounds like it's going to reduce the number of employees. The more overtime people work,
yep,
the few new employees you need to hire. That's a collateral effect that a lot of people won't enjoy very much.
You know, he argues his ideas would improve America's personal finances, standing, and the overall U.S. economy. A debate about the tax code will be a dominant legislative issue next year, given that tax cuts Trump signed in 2017 will be set to expire. If he's elected again, Trump could push Congress to enact some or all of his proposals, though that might be difficult if Democrats end up in control of either the House or the Senate.
Well,
estimates from the outside economic analysts of the cost of various tax cuts range between nearly $6 trillion and $10 trillion over 10 years, depending on which ideas become policy and how they're implemented.
Well, you know, when we look at the budget of middle-class America, and we see that the median budget, the median income for a couple is $75,000 for a family household. And when you look at that budget, if you reduce taxes, the $16,000 of taxes that are the average taxes paid by that household, by 10%, they're saving $1,600. That's not going to get them out of the hole. What will get them out of the hole is subsidizing their $19,000 of child daycare costs if they have two children in child daycare. What will get them out of the hole is reducing their $18,000 a year average rent for a three-bedroom unit, if you can get that reduced by a substantial sum of money. What will get them out of the hole is affecting the health care costs, which are $18,000 before they do anything else. It's those programs and the cost of those benefits that are putting these people behind the eight ball. It's not their taxes.
So Bill Whitaker, who is the guy on 60 Minutes who was asking those questions of Vice President and presidential candidate Kamala Harris, Sandy, would say, where's that money going to come from to do those things?
Well, the money, you know, and she answered that question.
Yeah,
she said that she was going to get the tax code to be fairer, to get people with substantial sums of money paying more in taxes, which is exactly what Warren Buffett would recommend. It's exactly what Bill Gates recommends. It's exactly what the millionaire group that is
the patriotic
millionaires recommend. It's exactly what all sorts of people recommend as being a necessary tool for getting us in a position where we can spend our money on the proper priorities. And the notion that there needs to be a tax cut for those people and for a further tax cut for corporations, many of whom pay almost no tax whatsoever already, is mystifying And it's something that the people who are the voters in this country ought to stand up and ask questions about. And they ought to ask questions about the trickle-down notion, the notion that those kind of tax cuts will fire up an already fired-up economy and will pay for itself, pay for themselves.
You know, in a statement, Trump campaign senior advisors touted Republicans' plans as the best way to jumpstart the economy. President Trump's plan will rein in wasteful spending, defeat inflation, reduce the burden of interest costs, and ignite economic growth that fuels federal revenue so we can make our economy great again.
Well, let me just say, $7.5 trillion of additional deficits over 10 years is a highly inflationary thing. Putting tariffs on, higher and higher tariffs on imported goods is highly inflationary. There isn't one element of Donald Trump's financial plan that isn't inflationary. None of it will beat inflation. So that statement embedded in that comment is just totally fallacious. It's not true. It's false.
You know, it sounds, for those of us who don't understand the intricacies of the budget and inflation and all the things that are associated with it, Sandy, it sounds good,
yeah,
right?
Personally, I'm going to run for office. I'm going to eliminate. I'm eliminating taxes altogether.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's going to really jumpstart the economy.
Yeah, and so when people hear this stuff, Sandy, they don't know.
They don't know. It's the chicken in every pot. Okay, it's that promise, and it's designed to be seductive, and it's designed to be something that is said but never followed up upon.
This is Andrew in Maine. To quote many self-important people, if you don't have a net worth of $100 million or more, should you have a say in tax policy for those with a wealth of $100 million or more? You don't understand it. To quote many self-important people,
yeah.
If you don't have a net worth of $100 million or more, should you have a say in tax policy for those with a net worth of $100 million or more.
Well, isn't that interesting? The people with a net worth of $100 million or more is a very small number, right?
Right.
So I guess they're going to design their own taxes. I guess we can all design our own taxes.
All right. 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show. Sandy Williams.
Jimmy Buffett's trying to make lemonade out of lemons.
Do you go through the lyrics before you?
Well,
it's still morning.
I know. Jimmy Buffett was a party time all the time.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams and you. We were going to finish this topic up again about Donald Trump's so-called tax plans, and that Sandy has, you've kind of, made mockery of.
Well, it is. It's to be made a mockery of. There's nothing serious about it, other than promising whatever it is that the public might want to hear. No taxes on overtime. There's just a that makes no economic sense whatsoever, and the collateral damage that might do to the labor market is interesting. And the only people who are happy with that are the people who can figure out how they can get to overtime. The people who are unhappy about that are the people who don't have jobs and might get jobs if people weren't working 60 hours a week. You know, they were working 40. And the just the notion of making promises that don't do the economy any good in the long run, this whole notion of tariffs, all the inflationary effects of what he promises. Wall Street's very worried about his promises and very worried about the inflationary effect. He talks about getting rid of the Federal Reserve's independence. That in and of itself will be inflationary. What president will ever raise interest rates at a level necessary to stifle inflation when it's so politically unpopular? Won't happen.
All right, let's go to Bill from Oconomowoc. Good morning to you, Bill. You say what?
First of all, tell Sandy I need more elephant spray. I'm running low. I got his first case, but I'm running out. I mean, I'm really running out. So Sandy sent us a second shipment of that spray.
Yeah.
It does work, by the way. It does work.
Yeah.
But here's why I called. I cannot believe, as Americans watch Florida almost get wiped off the map, that he's spreading this nonsense about FEMA. I have a challenge to the man who uses a golden toilet and his best friend is the wealthiest man in the world. Write a check for Florida and we might start believing what you're talking about. He is going to hurt the people in Florida. They're aware of it. He's losing people as we speak that are voting for him because his stupidity is forced to the max on the devastation of Florida. I'll hang up, but remember the case of elephant spray.
Thank you, Bill. You want to respond, Sandy?
I mean, you know, I think that his effort to try and create a politics out of these storms in Georgia, for instance, making an accusation that was totally false. He tried to make the same accusation about Florida and was quickly
debunked.
Debunked because Kamala had actually just been there for 3 hours and had spent time there. But, you know, the notion of politicizing these things rather than get behind it, and it's interesting because the governors of the states are actually unwilling to politicize it. Florida has indicated that the president and White House has given them everything they need. And so did Georgia. And none of the other states in the Carolinas, none of those have accused Washington of anything based on sort of a political activity, their lack of responsiveness. Everyone understands that the capacity to respond is constrained by capacity, but and the capacity to respond to storms that are way out of above the level of any expectation makes them even more difficult. The fact that Project 2025 wants to get rid of the government's meteorological, the ability of the government to forecast these things and deal with them is pretty telling in terms of the idiocy of some of the proposals in that Project 2025.
All right, let's go to Tom from L.A. Good morning to you, Tom. You say what?
Good morning. We the people ultimately are the government, and we're going to show that from now until November 5th. Everyone get out the vote. Vote early. You never know what weather might be like. Get out and vote. I'm handing my ballot in today. I know my family in Wisconsin have already done their ballot. So please get out your vote and vote Harris and Walz. Second, if the Republicans are spewing it, if they're saying it, they're doing it. They're either, someone said the other day, it's either a confession or it's projection. And it's absolutely true. Whenever they speak, just remember, they're telling on themselves. You know, this whole thing has got to be a landslide in terms of winning this election. And when you have people that are right-wing calling up and they got nothing, I mean, a simple question to ask Trump is not just letting him get away with saying, I will do it. I will do it better. I will do it the best. And has no plan behind it. What type of people out there trust anybody that just says that? Kamala Harris has a plan for childcare, for health care, for taxes, for rent or mortgage, which are things that we've talked about on the show over and over again. If you are in favor of the working people, if you are a true man and you care about women, then you will vote for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. Thank you, Earl.
All right, thank you for that commercial. I can't disagree with you. Let me go to Tony again, a text. I think everyone agrees we need to take care of people in a disaster, and politicizing aid is nothing but harmful. We can follow the examples of governors and just get this done and help people in need. Sandy, isn't that the way it should be?
Well, yeah. I mean, I thought that the discussion last night by Kamala did indicate that there were not only policies, but a thought that there were thoughts about how to finance those policies and how to implement the policies. There wasn't a promise to solve a problem. It was a discussion of policies designed to solve problems, which is a refreshing change from what the opponent has been doing.
All right. 855-752-4842 is Tuesday. Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams and you. A lot more on the other side.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Squalls out on the Gulf Stream. Big storms coming soon. I passed out in my hammock. Gotta slept way past noon. Stood up and tried to focus. I hoped I wouldn't have to look far. I knew I could use a Bloody Mary, so I stumbled next door to the bar. And now I must confess, I could use some rest.
He's got a nice voice. Who is that?
Kenny Chesney.
Oh, Kenny Chesney. All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. It means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy. And Sandy, I thought this was an interesting article in today's Wall Street Journal. You know, and you and I both have sons. And so, you know, I don't have any daughters. You don't have any daughters. Where can young men today find purpose? That's what this article is about. And there's a better way to develop their talents than through the usual university track. So, Sandy, when your sons and my sons were young, it was young people, young men, there was already kind of a path cut for them. They knew that they were going to be productive. The society was set in a manner that would provide that, either through working in industry as I did, trades, or they could go to universities. But the opportunities were there, and purpose was available for young boys to become men and be productive in the society. But Sandy, it's no longer that way, and it hasn't been now for a long time. And there are many young men who have been lost in our society. It's not a good thing long-term for our society when so many young men don't know what they're going to do or where they're going to go and aren't productive citizens and are working menial jobs and eventually have families.
Well, I think it has to do with the evolution of our economy, right? So that the kind of jobs that used to be, first of all, men used to fill all the jobs, okay? Now we've got a pretty even divide. Men and women are filling jobs. So I suppose that makes it somewhat more difficult for men to find jobs when they're competing. But in a way, this article smacks a little bit of misogyny. That doesn't sound like they're very worried about the young girl, young women figuring out what kind of future they've got or what kind of job they've got on the horizon. But I think that the loss of manufacturing jobs has created, and the lack of training in jobs has caused people to have to create their own futures in a much more self-active kind of way. People have to think about and create their futures, whereas people used to just step into paths that were ready-made for them 50 and 60 years ago. Now people have to make their own path. And I think that's a much more difficult process for young men and young women. And so, you know, the extent to which young men are lost, I suspect that they're actually, if you step back far enough, you'd find out that a bunch of young women have the same issues that they face. But it's more obvious with young men because men used to dominate the workplace. And now they
participate. Well, they used to be the breadwinners of the family. That's
well, and now, but the now the median family has two breadwinners, and so it, like I said, the whole complexion of our economy and the whole impact of that change in complexion that it's had on our culture is significant. And some of the change in the economy is the result of the change in our culture, but 75 years ago. The breadwinners, there was one breadwinner in a middle-class family, and on average and predominantly that breadwinner was the male participant in that family. Now there are two breadwinners on average in the median family. And so, you know, that's a big change right there.
So, Sandy, creating their own futures and paths for the futures, that's not an easy task.
Not an easy task. Finding the path and pursuing it is much more difficult than stepping into a job that has the probability of being a lifetime employment.
Right.
Far different. You find your path in day one, and you simply stay within the organization you were in and move forward. Now people will have, first of all, they'll put their feet in probably three or four different potential paths before they choose their path. Young people getting into the workplace. And it's much more common that people will have two or three kinds of careers during their lifetime while they're searching.
So Sandy, this is, I think, without question, a very serious discussion that I don't know, you know, while the transformation of losing all of these jobs, like the one I held for 34 years, without a skill, so to speak. As you stated, those jobs were there for us when we left high school. And even if we didn't leave high school, they were there. But now so many young men are lost in the system and don't feel worthy. And so what they do is they hide from the society, and so they use substances to mask their what they feel is shame because they haven't been able to toe the line that their fathers did or maybe somebody else did. This is a serious psychological issue, Sandy, that causes many of the major problems.
No question. I think that our society, in light of the fact that our economy has evolved to this point where people have to make their own way, we ought to get far more training about how one makes their own way so that, number one, people would understand that that's a problem they need to face up to directly themselves. Number two, they would get some comfort from the fact that they aren't alone. They aren't the only one who's feeling adrift in this manner, which would potentially let them draw support from the community that they're in instead of retreating to isolation and shame and drugs and the things that have happened. Because clearly we do have an epidemic amongst our young people that involves drugs, that involves the inability to get themselves jump-started into a career.
Well, Sandy, one self-worth you have to have in order to be able to do to be a valuable member of a society, one's self-worth has to be there, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, people derive satisfaction and a sense of self-worth from their capacity to be a positive contribution to what surrounds them, whether it's their family, the society they live in, the locale, the community. Yeah, and I think that we just have to face up to the fact that young people today have a far more difficult situation they face finding their path than we did, than the boomers did, the ones who stand back at age 60 and say, these kids are lost, you know, it's their fault. But if they looked at their own path, they'd realize that their path was far simpler than the path that is, the potential paths that these young people now have to try and find.
Senator, there's no question that I know my path was a lot easier than my son's paths. And you just watch people in our society who feel that they have no value. And so it's going to require a lot of our society to see that, Sandy, and our society has the capacity to fix this. I think anybody who can do the things that we do in this country has the capacity to fix the direction of its citizens.
Well, we certainly need to provide support. And what doesn't really work is to simply fall back on the notion that rugged individualism is the answer. Individualism is the answer, but it needs to be guided. It needs to be educated. It needs to be supported, because the individual faces a far more difficult task today than they did 65 years ago, 60 years ago, 50 years ago, in terms of finding a career path that provides that sense of self-worth.
So, Sandy, it's one of the solutions, and I think you and I concur, where can young men find their purpose today? And it talks clearly about the trades.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the fact is that there is a shortage. It's interesting.
I know.
we have a shortage of workers in an area that could be occupied by people who are desperately looking for a path, looking for a way to earn a livable wage. And these trades, somewhat because of the shortage, but are paying far higher than median incomes to people who
with benefits.
Yeah, with benefits, for people who are willing to step in and learn the trade and do the work.
Let's go back to Mike from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Mike. Your thoughts?
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that. Real quick, what we've been looking for is equity. And for way, way too long, since the Reagan administration, equity has not been there. All the loving, if you will, has been focused on the job creators, the trickle-down economy that was sold to us. The whole system has been weighted toward the top, and then all we have to do is look to see how many billionaires there are now, and now soon to be trillionaires. You know, it's almost like, again, we've normalized this stuff. Even though billionaires, I mean, that's just a lot of money. I mean, you're never going to be able to spend it, but now it's normalized. So again, I think what we have to do is get back to speaking about what we expect from government and what we expect from good government, because we all don't mind paying taxes if we're getting value back, if we feel, you know, we feel we're getting our end of the deal, you know, and they're holding up theirs. But what it takes to get good government is the people must buy into it, must support it, and we must have the infrastructure required to support it. None of these haters and people that have been, frankly, trying to tear down government for two generations now, guys. So, you know, I think it's a lot easier fix if we just go back to the basics and talk about with the people, educate the people that, you know, good government is possible. It's very doable, but it's up to the people to make it happen. And I think that's where the disconnect is.
Hey, Mike, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. Sandy, young men express lack of purpose in life, work, and studies, but purpose isn't something you invent or consume. We aren't born with purpose. It isn't walking around looking for an owner. It can't be bought or borrowed. As with trust, respect, reputation, love, and good marriage, purpose is earned through hard work, patience, compromise, and capacity for setbacks. It takes time and hard work to find it. By trying different things and jobs and experiences, purpose will form and show itself. You need to trust this time-tested process. It's a journey of discovery, but you quit and it won't reveal itself.
Well, but the issue really, I mean, this that's sort of a simplified article. Sounds like someone who didn't have such a hard path who has written wrote it. I think the problem is the difficulty in seeing a future right. that provides a purpose, okay? I mean, you can have a purpose of making enough money and having a family and all of that, but if you can't see a path, it's pretty hard to get through the forest.
I think that's very well said, Sandy. 855-752-4842. Hang on the phone lines. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
Yes, it's quite insane. I think it hurts my brain, but it cleans me out, and then I can go on. Yes, it cleans me out, and then I can go on. Yes, it cleans me out, and then I can go on.
All right, welcome back to the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays to my co-host, Sandy Williams, and you. And Sandy, you know, we were just talking about so many wayward young men in the society, and it has to be addressed. Let's go back to Gene from Eau Claire. Good morning to you, Gene. You say what? Gene? Okay. But Sandy, you also said women as well. And yes, our society long term can't be as stable as it's been if you have so many young people, even with all the technology.
Well, we just have far too many people who are underemployed, okay? And that doesn't mean what they're doing is not important. It means that they're underpaid for the work they're doing, such that, you know, when you have a median income family of 76,000 and it's two breadwinners, one might be earning 40, one might be earning 36 or some split like that. 40 or 36 isn't a livable wage. So you've got two people who combined earn a livable wage, but each one of them apart in standing alone is not earning a livable wage. And that's a far different condition than we had in our economy 50, 60 years ago when people who worked full time earned a living wage, you know? And so that change has been invidious and it has affected a lot of things. It's also affected the ability to see a prosperous future if you're a young person trying to figure out what you want to step into.
Let me ask you, Sandy, technology and young people, and Calvin, you can adhere to this. There are many young people who think they're going to make their careers in technology. And so they're dealing with these different technical sites and things, and they're not technicians. They're just people who think they're going to be able to somehow through influencing make their careers. Calvin,
Yeah, I think that's a common thing for kids my age and younger is being a YouTuber or a streamer. I mean, I went through like a week and a half phase when I was in high school where I thought I was going to make YouTube videos. It didn't last very long. But I mean, there are success stories in that area. And
but few
seems,
and far between.
Yeah, few and far between, and people see it and it seems fun. So,
Well, Calvin, you're sitting here. We're talking about something that you actually have firsthand experience with.
Yeah, that's why.
You know, I mean, do you think that the do you think it's been easy for you and easy for your peers to figure out the path they have towards the career that they want to embrace for a future that will, you know, be the one they want?
Well, I mean, I just know from my own experience, I went to college not really knowing what I wanted to do. I thought maybe at one point I was going to be a lawyer or a teacher. And then I thought I was going to be a engineer for music and mix music professionally. And then I ended up being a radio producer. So, yeah, I don't know. It's everyone's got to find their own path. And it definitely seems like people are struggling to find that. And I don't know. They just they need to be exposed to more things. Because if I wouldn't have been introduced to radio in college, I would have never even thought to
come. So, Calvin, Tony says, hey, some people make a living in YouTube. Well, Tony, yeah, you are, but for every one of you who's making the living at YouTube, there are hundreds of thousands.
Well, what I said before, though, is has become more and more true, which is there are many ways now for people to invent ways to have a future, right? There are. It's much more possible for people to create businesses that didn't seem like businesses in the past, being an influencer on the So that is a path. But it's not one that's a certain success, that's for sure. And it's not one that might be satisfactory to a number of people.
Or provide longevity.
Or, yeah. So, you know, I just think that the lack of clearly identified institutionalized futures which we used to have, which have sort of evaporated in today's world, require that people, young people, exercise a great deal more initiative as they forge their path. And so that, to me, is a difficulty that needs to be attended to. I think young people need to understand that that's the case. They need to be educated about it. We probably need to set up at least vocational training that would help people with that kind of process. And I think many people who go to college who are intelligent, capable people probably need to do something after college or need to have the process they can go through that will help them address this notion of exercising career initiative.
You know, Sandy, it's partially and part and parcel to why you and I are working with Voices of the Elders. To catch children at young ages, we're working with them 10 to 13. And so if we can catch them young enough, we can kind of have these kind of conversations and dialogues with them early on.
Yeah.
You know, if they don't have some direction and guidance, then they have to sift their way through it.
Well, what has happened is that many people, when they get out of high school and go to college, think they have to know what they're going to do for a living at that point so they can go to college and get trained for it. And that's much different than the experience we all had when you could get out of college and go to a job that was going to train you, okay? And they were looking for people that had done well in school, that had demonstrated intelligence so they could focus that intelligence through training. But anyway, I think that my heart goes out actually to the incoming generation because I think it's a more difficult path mainly because of all the initiative that's required.
All right. I want to thank you, Sandy, as always. Thank everybody who made the show go. You know, tomorrow I'll be joined by Robert Miranda of FLAC. As President Joe Biden is in Milwaukee today to talk about lead pipes removal. Up next, I'm going to be joining Jane Matinee and Greg Bach. Excited about that. So up next, see you later.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.